Welcome everyone to the Macro Hive a week ahead. I'm joined by Dominique once again. Dom, how are you?
Very well, Ben. Lost my AC, but surviving. Thank you.
Plenty to talk about this week. Plenty has gone on. And usually we like to go through the week chronologically, but it feels like Friday's been the big day this week. Jackson Hole. So perhaps we can start there. We can start discussing what seems like somewhat diverging stories from the minutes to Jackson Hole. So could you give us your rundown? What, number one, what you took from the minutes, and then number two, what you took from Jackson Hole and what you're taking overall from Fed speakers at the moment?
I was surprised. The minute seemed a little more hawkish than the presser, but then this morning Chair Powell was very consistent with the presser. Downside risk to the labor market have increased. If the labor market goes, it will go very fast. On the other hand, inflation risk are stable. His base case is for the price level increase caused by the tariff to dissipate and not to turn into an increase in a permanent increase in the inflation rate. And the core, in a way, the core of the speech is his view on the labor market that one way the tariff could trigger a lasting increase in inflation if suddenly workers ask for higher nominal wages to make up for the increase in prices, and then employers try to pass on to their customers this increase in wages. And he doesn't think it's likely because the labor market is weak. So overall, the speech, consistent with the presser, suggests that the minutes, maybe they were just reflecting the fact that the FOMC didn't have the employment report at the time of the meeting, so a little bit more hawkish. But the speech confirms we are on track for a risk management cut in September.
And I mean, do you think that means over sort of the next few weeks we should start to hear other Fed speakers perhaps hint at the possibility of a September cut? I mean, we had Collins today basically saying that, look, we shouldn't wait for the labor market risks to be realized. Do you think we're going to hear more of that?
I think it's likely because in terms of Dove's hawks, the people who are pushing for a cut on the FOMC, it's not just Bowman and Waller, but we also have Mary Daly, Cash Carey, now President Collins, and the bottom line is the Fed, they are just plain old-fashioned economists. They think like economists. Their leader has made a very compelling economic case for a risk management cut. So I'm expecting them to, most of them, to fall into line.
And I mean, staying on the Fed, but on a slightly different note, Cook has obviously been under pressure in the past week. Now, I mean, let's not discuss whether she is guilty or not guilty. But we should probably take a step back and consider what Trump and his sort of allies are attempting to do, and how you think the Fed actually responds. I mean, it's very clear that Trump basically couldn't pressure Powell out of his job. He failed there. Powell had basically stood his ground and remains in his job. Now he's sort of going after the rest of the fish in the pond. I mean, what's your view on, number one, how Trump is treating the Fed? Will he just continue to do this? If Cook survives, do you think he just continues to go after more on the board? And then the second thing is, how do you think the Fed continue to act? Because it seems right now they've remained in sort of resolute.
So that President Trump will continue to post truth about the Fed and his frustration with it, very likely. But I think, the Fed has really held the line. Today's speech shows that the Fed has not gotten overly hawkish in reaction to pressure from the administration. I would think the Fed is winning this battle because they are sticking to their mandate, using the legal protections afforded to them by the Federal Reserve Act. Also, the Supreme Court has made it clear that Fed senior officials could not be removed by the president. So I think they'll hold the line. My expectation is that Governor Cook remains. But even if she were to resign, this would open a second slot on the board for President Trump. But it would be two votes out of 12 and 19 FOMC members. Because in my view, even if Vice Chair Bowman and Governor Waller were appointed by Trump, they are not going to push for 200 to 300 basis point cuts in the Fed funds rate, because I know they would crash the market, probably crash the economy because of the impact on inflation, inflation expectation. It's a lose-lose. This would be a lose-lose proposition. What it means is that, a few more, they would, what they are likely to do is to tweak policy towards a marginally more dovish direction. And honestly, monetary policy is an art, not a science. There is room to argue. I would argue, for instance, that the Fed should have cut last month. So I see the impact of the two Trump nominees are more than a tweak, than a fundamental change
I
in
mean, look,
policy.
in my head, how much of this is just a blame game? I mean, Trump is not a dumb guy. He's been around the block. He knows what he's doing, and he'll know in his head that he can't basically take over the Fed. He can't start directing the Fed. I mean, he's tried, and you try, you're like, it doesn't hurt to try, right? But how much of this is basically him preparing for the midterms next year? Because if he can get someone, or when he puts someone basically on the board next year that is aligned with him, he then has essentially a credible economic voice in some form on the Fed board that basically you'd expect sort of to back his view. So when they head into the midterms, he can basically say, look, it's not my fault that rates are so high. It's not my fault that the Fed are keeping rates high and slowing the economy. Do you view it in that way at all?
So possibly, but I'm trying to stay very focused on what matters to investors. And in the end, what matters is, where the Fed is at, irrespective of a blame game. I think the key issue in terms of the midterm, the key issue for investors is whether President Trump will implement a fiscal stimulus. And I think he will, because more likely than not, because he got the sequencing wrong. He's implemented tariff before the economy could feel the impact of the tax cut, whatever this impact is going to be, because it looks like tariff revenues could actually offset the tax cut in his bill. So let's see how it shakes up. But I think the slowdown in the US economy that we are seeing now, it's not going to change anytime soon. So I see very well the administration pushing forward a stimulus package, a fiscal stimulus package, because policy, monetary policy will remain out of reach. And that, I think, could be a risk to inflation, but it's a next year story. So yeah, we'll get a lot more truths from President Trump, but we really need to stay focused on the bottom line here.
Okay, so going to the data then, sort of what should direct, hopefully you would hope the bottom line. The past week we've seen a couple sort of diverging narratives. You've had the PMIs jump higher, But at the same time, we saw the conference board reading was a touch weak. And at the same time, you had claims both initial and continuing a touch higher, but in sort of reality, when you step back, the relatively low versus history. I mean, what's your broader view on the US economy at the moment?
So my broad view is that the household sector has decided to stabilize its debt. They had a big decrease in their debt ratios during the pandemic because of the enormous amounts the government gave to them, so they could splurge on durables without having to borrow. They just used the cash the government gave them. So you had a bit of a step decline in consumer debt, and I guess people have a vague, a long-term notion of how much debt they are prepared to take on. So they borrowed more in 22, 23, 24. And so we had extraordinary strength in consumption, which, by the way, Chair Powell alluded to in the presser. And now consumers are looking at their debt, they are looking at their debt service ratio, perhaps also the fact that the government is getting tougher on student debt repayments. And they've just greatly reduced their borrowing. And so consumption is slowing. And if you look at real consumption, it's been flat for the past 6 months. In my view, that's going to continue for quite some time. In part because people are worried about the impact of the tariff. And also, as we just discussed, the tariff are lifting the price level, which means that people's income is going down. So the consumers are pulling on their horns. And so in terms of how does that work with the data, as you know, the PMI, great doubter of the predictive power of PMI, they decoupled from the economy about 10 years from the GDP data about 10 years ago, possibly because there seems to be a strong political p bias in how people reply to surveys. So Republicans are always more optimistic when there is a Republican government in place, and vice versa for the Democrat, and which is very much in line with the trend of political polarization that we've seen over the past 20 years. So I tend not to pay too much attention to the PMIs. Two data that give me comfort with my view is the other two data that you mentioned. We have a steady increase in the trend in jobless claim, continuing claims. The Richmond Fed has built a recession signal based on those claims, which makes a lot of sense from an economic perspective, and also has performed very well in the past. And that signal has been increasing for the past 2 months, so it remains well below the recession trigger. So it shows the economy is weakening. The other signal that this time around I pay attention is the Conference Board leading economic indicators. It's performed very well as a recession signal. Except in 22, 23, largely because of the inversion of the yield curve, which was a weird inversion. It was not an inversion about a recession is imminent, the Fed is going to cut. It was more an inversion about we are changing inflation regime. Inflation is going to be higher in the future than now. So that distorted the signal. But if you look at post-World War II, that signal is strong. And right now it's hitting the recession trigger. So both completely independent signal show a slowdown in growth. And so, yeah, I stick to my view on the slowdown for that reason.
And I mean, just on the data side of things, we obviously have some consumption data coming out next week, both the second quarterly reading and then sort of the July numbers. Well, what do you make of those? What are you expecting? And are there any other data points we should be looking at as well?
Okay, so the GDP, the Q2 GDP it's not going to change fundamentally the big picture. What we had in H1 was a big increase in import to avoid the tariff in Q1, and in Q2 a reversal. So we need to look at the average of both quarters, and we're still going to get growth around 1%, even with the revision. I think the more interesting data is the July consumption. This will be the first monthly consumption data of the second quarter. In my view, the consensus forecast, which is based on high frequency data like credit card receipts, 0.5%, which would be based on the PC, the total PC data, that would be 20 basis points real. I think it's a little bit on the high side. If my view that consumption is going to remain weak, if that view is correct, probably too weak, too high. We'll see. The other data point that's really important is goods import. And it's really important because it's going to give us the actual tariff rate. And that is going to tell us a lot about what's going on with the impact of tariff policy. We already got the tariff revenue for July, and they were almost unchanged from June, 27.7 billion versus 26.6 billion. But we don't know if this is because the tariff rates didn't increase or if we had a big decline in imports. Imports have been falling since March. And so this is going to give us a number of clues. So first of all, what is the administration actually doing with tariff policy? And there, like with just about everything else with President Trump, we need to pay attention to what he does, not what he says. And he's been claiming this super duper high tariff, but the number of exemption is enormous. So it's such a complex tariff regime that we actually need to look at the data. What is the ratio of tariff revenues to imports? And actually, if you look at June, it was 10%. And a 10% tariff is actually what the Fed considers a low tariff scenario, a manageable tariff scenario. So one of the questions in the back of my mind is, Chair Powell having such a benign view of inflation trend because he realizes that when it comes to tariff policy, the administration bark is worse than its bite? So we find out. The other thing that we're going to find out is whether we have a tariff Laffer curve. So our tariff revenues are slowing a lot. Again, is this because of the tariff basically reducing imports a lot? And since the sector of the economy that is import intensive is manufacturing, are we having a manufacturing recession? It's hard to tell when you look at the employment data. It's been falling, but it's been falling forever for a simple reason. Manufacturing in the US is super efficient. Factories, when we build a factories, we increase a factory, we increase the demand for robots, not for human being. So, what's going on there? What's the impact of the tariff? I think the long-term impact of the tariff in terms of building a manufacturing sector, it doesn't look good because there is so much uncertainty around tariff policy that it's really a downer for private CapEx. So I'm quite skeptical that on current trend we're going to see a manufacturing revival anytime soon. But it's a long-term process. Let's see. So to me, these are really the two key data points.
And I mean, I'm just looking at the terminal now. In outside of the data, then we have Logan, Williams, Barkin, and Waller speaking next week. Do any of those stand out to you? Are there any of those that you think are sort of a must watch?
Waller, definitely, very much so. And what's interesting with Waller, he's obviously one of the two, three dots in the June dot plot. Does he stick to his three cuts for this year, or is he going to go for something more aggressive? I mean, the reason for more aggressive cuts would be that he turns very pessimistic on the economy. In my view, there's not enough data to turn super pessimistic. I mean, one data point to watch, not the coming week, but the week after, would be the unemployment rate, obviously. But based on what's going on right now, there's no cause to call for multiple rate cuts. So my base case, Governor Waller continues to call for three cuts this year, starting in September.
And then just to nicely round off, then you're still expecting 2 to 3 rate cuts this year, right?
Yeah, and that's based on no recession. But if I'm wrong, if for instance we start seeing a very fast increase in unemployment, which is a r very reliable signal of recession and makes sense economically, which is why I like that signal. If we see that, then the Fed will, cut. The Fed will, meet President Trump wishes, but for the wrong reasons. And let me stress, this is not my my best case.
No. Well, incredible, Dominique. Thank you for joining me, and thank you everyone for watching. This has been the Macro Hive week ahead.
Thanks, Ben. Good luck, everybody.